Okay, so welcome to the third podcast in the ArtConnects 19 podcast series. This journey has taken me from central London with Matthew Taylor of the RSA up to Derby with Richard Gerver, the education consultant and innovator. And today, I go across the Welsh border into Wales and have a chat with the education minister there, Kirsty Williams. A fantastic conversation. Many people feel they need to go to Australia, to Dubai, to Finland to get a sense for how education may evolve to meet the needs of the 21st century, to coin a cliche. And it's happening on our doorstep. It's happening in Wales. They've built a curriculum with four key curriculum purposes around enterprise, around ambition, around health, confidence, and ethics, and informed citizens. Fantastic chat, and you won't believe some of the coincidences that pop up in this, literally from her family heritage. In fact, I remember seeing a sign at Google's headquarters just the other week, actually, advertising their Take Your Kids to Work Day, which is something they do in Google, which we've helped them with in the past. It's something many companies do. And I'm mindful sometimes you see those lads riding in lorries with their dads who are delivery drivers who have to childmind over the holidays, and you think, what sort of an experience that's giving those kids, meeting people, dealing with business issues that pop up for their father. My son has to contend with being bundled into the car and taken to South Wales to interview an education minister, although we did have a fantastic afternoon in a coal mine, the Big Pit afterwards, which is just breathtaking and very humbling. And that reminded me of somebody else's son, actually, a son I spoke to in Yorkshire whose father was a coal mine. He told me some very powerful things which resonate with this conversation. It all came around, actually, from a connection through the amazing professor, Mick Waters, who I've met a few times. He's been very generous. He's connected with us with schools like Langston Primary, who we did some work with. So I hope you enjoy it and see you on the other side. Wow, well, I never had any idea what fun this podcasting lark would be. We did the A for Art with Matthew Taylor down at the RSA in the Strand. We did the Art of the Village with Richard Gerver up in Derby. And here I am in South Wales in a very sunny Cardiff Bay. Wondering what to call this podcast. I think we need to go back in the alphabet. We've done A, let's do B. I thought about B for Brave, but I've got that lined up for somebody else. And this isn't about Brave. Brave is a state of mind, I think. This is really a podcast about people who are doing something very bold. So let's call this B for Bold, the Art of Bold. So here I am in Cardiff Bay with a fantastic person to speak to, the Minister for Education here in Wales, Kirsty Williams. Hello, Miss Williams.
Oh, you can call me Kirsty. And thank you very much for showing an interest in what we're up to here in Wales. It's great to have an opportunity to talk about the work and the changes and the reforms that we're undertaking.
Fantastic. I'm not going to be able to speak quickly enough. I've got so much I want to talk to you about. But let's start with you. I mean, you have got a very, very, I think you've possibly got one of the most exciting jobs in the world, if I can say that without being too sycophantic. Tell me a little bit about you there. Let's rewind a bit about you and what made you suitable for this job, because somebody must have thought, yep, Kirsty's the person for this job. What made them think that?
You're right. It's certainly the best job to have in the Welsh Government, and it's a fantastic opportunity. Of course, I'm in a slightly different position in the Welsh Government as the only Liberal Democrat in the government alongside Labour colleagues. And when I was offered this opportunity by the then First Minister, Carwyn Jones, he said to me, come on, he said, you spent the last 5 years when you were in opposition giving me a hard time about education and what needed to change. Let's see how good you are. And what an opportunity to be able to head a department for a subject area which has been a passion for me personally and a passion for my party. It really is a privilege to work alongside educators of all kinds, because I'm responsible for preschool education right the way through to postgraduates at universities, and indeed we're actually working on a programme of ensuring that people of Wales have a right to lifelong learning. So it's really wonderful to be able to be in a position to affect change and work alongside educators to put in place lasting reforms, which I think will be great for the children and young people of Wales. And if we get it right for them, we'll be getting it right for the future of our nation.
It's interesting because one of my favourite educators often says, we were all children once, so we should have an empathy for this. I'm assuming you went to school as well. So what was school like for you? What memories do you have from that? And are you implementing any of that, like sort of free tuck shop every day or whatever you want to do at school? I mean, what have you brought that into your practice?
I don't know whether I have. You know, I am very happy, generally very happy memories of my education. One particular teacher stands out, Mrs. Lewis in my primary school in the village of Binyer in Carmarthenshire. Quite an eccentric lady. The classroom looked more like a boudoir. It had very colourful rugs on the floor, silk standard lamps around the room. And we did all our lessons to a backdrop of Paul Robeson records playing in an old-fashioned gramophone in the corner of the room. She taught us everything from maths through to learning the words of Handel's Messiah. She did so with immense grace. She had a white blonde hair, coiffured to perfection, high on the top of her head, and wore billowing silk caftans. I can close my eyes now, and I can hear her voice in my head.
Sounds fantastic. What was her name again? Sorry.
Mrs. Lewis, and her husband ran the local florists. If you had a baby, you were getting married, or somebody had died, you went to Mr. Lewis's for the flowers for that occasion.
And this is a village school.
A local village school. Perhaps more importantly, rather than my own education, is to remember I've got children in the education system now. So I'm approaching this, yes, as a politician, but I also approach it as a parent, because my girls, who are now 17, 14 and 13, they're in the Welsh education system now. And I want to get it right for them. And I kind of feel like all of Wales's children are now my children. So I want the best for all children and young people.
I must admit, I think that it's a real game changer when you've got children, because I've got a bit of an agenda that very few people really care about education. They think they do, even if they've got children or not. But when you've got kids, everything changes and you start studying it. And if you're not careful, it's a bit too late. By the time you notice something, it might take a year or two to actually implement any change. And the project we started, STEAMCO, was brought around because I saw a TED talk, I read a couple of books, and then thought, hang on, what does this mean to my kids? And started to do something. So let's rewind and let's frame the fantastic work you're doing around your curriculum, around Mrs. Lewis then. So just imagine Mrs. Lewis was sitting here and you had to explain the curriculum to her, what's happened and what it was like for her and what you're doing now. Maybe just sort of give an overview to her, an elevator pitch of what you're doing for education here.
Well, in some ways, the curriculum which we are developing here in Wales would not be unfamiliar to Mrs. Lewis and schools of the 1970s. What it's a real culture change for and a real challenge to is those that have done all their teaching since the introduction of the national curriculum. A curriculum that is so old, it was published before the fall of the Berlin Wall, before the fact that we all carried around a computer in our pockets where we could Google the answer to any question that might pop into our heads. It's so old, even I was in secondary school when it was first introduced. And it laid down the law to our professionals. It told them exactly what they should teach. And the content was, my understanding is the content was devised by some of the great and the good that got together on one weekend, for instance, for the history syllabus and said, these are the things that children need to learn. And I think it's robbed the teaching profession of their creativity and of their ability to truly respond to individuals in their classroom, because they are contained, they're confined by that list of things that they have to tick off. So for Mrs. Lewis in the early 70s, probably wouldn't be so much of a challenge. But for those that have worked all their professional life within the confines of the national curriculum, what we're doing for them is freeing them up, releasing their creativity, releasing their professionalism to deliver a curriculum in their schools, in their classroom, yes, supported by a national framework, but allowing them to truly respond to the children in front of them, and recognising that in preparing those young people to be successful citizens, successful human beings, people who can live successful, personal lives, but it can also contribute to their communities and, of course, to the economy, that we can't just keep doing the same things. We have to build on, yes, a curriculum that has knowledge, because there will always be the need for knowledge, but actually looks at developing human beings as a range of skills which will allow them to contribute successfully to the world in which we will be sending them out into.
And I think that's absolutely evident in your curriculum. You've got these sort of four pillars. Could you just give us an overview of those quickly? Because I don't want STEAMCO and this podcast to be seen as an English-centric thing, but there will be a lot of people who won't be aware of what you're doing. And dare I say, it's actually a fairly well-kept secret. I should be careful saying that with anybody in your media department in the room. But we need to get this out, and that's why I'm here. So can you just give us an elevator pitch on those pillars and the relevance of those?
Okay, so the new curriculum was first proposed in Successful Futures by Professor Graham Donaldson. He did an independent review of the current curriculum and assessment arrangements that we have in the Welsh education system. And you know, he came to some pretty damning conclusions about how the current curriculum had really curtailed the ability of professionals to really impact upon children. And what was being proposed is that we have a purpose-led curriculum around those four purposes. And those purposes are to develop our children and young people as ambitious, capable learners, ready to learn throughout their lives, enterprising, creative contributors, ready to play their full part in life and in work, healthy, confident individuals, ready to lead fulfilling lives as valued members of our society, and ethical, informed citizens, ready to be citizens of Wales, and ready to be citizens of the world. And my goodness, when we look at the political turmoil going around us at the moment, we need that more than ever. So those are the four purposes of the curriculum, and everything then moves out from those four purposes into six areas of learning and experience. And it's really important that we remember the experience bit as well, because this isn't about children being simply in receipt of a lesson. This is about actually creating a curriculum where, yes, that the learning happens through also doing and having those experiences.
A bit like the difference between doing education to somebody and doing education with somebody.
Absolutely. So not passive recipients of the sage on the stage, you know, talking to, lecturing to, but actually, as you said, children and young people being active participants, having their voices heard, having their passions recognised, and being able to learn through experiences as well. And those six AOLEs are expressive arts, health and well-being, humanities, languages, literacy and communication, maths and numeracy, and science and technology.
And they're the six areas of learning and experience which underpin the four core purposes.
That's right.
I mean, gosh, it's hard to see a gap in that, or a hole. You know, where are the holes? And just out of interest, has it come up for much criticism? Have people come up and say, oh, you've missed this, you missed that?
Well, we're at the critical stage, and we're about to get to that stage, actually.
Right.
Now, of course, you know, what we've had in Wales is people sometimes, you know, that what I regard as a rather false debate about knowledge versus skills. And sometimes...
Well, when it's that binary, it's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes people mischaracterise what we're doing as being devoid of knowledge. That's not the case. But we're about to reach a really critical point of our reform journey. To date, what's also really important for those unfamiliar with the system is that the curriculum content has been developed by the profession. Supported by academics.
And that's the teaching profession.
The teaching
teachers,
profession.
And
teachers.
Not this kind of industry that sits behind education.
No, not
sometimes.
At all. We identified and people volunteered to be part of what's been called our Pioneer Network. These are real life teachers in classrooms day in, day out with children who have a passion and a skill and an expertise.
And that's teachers and leaders,
isn't teachers
it?
And right. Leaders from a diversity of settings. So primary, secondary. We've involved our colleagues from FE because, of course, children going through this system potentially will end up in FE. Our special schools, So making sure that this is a fully inclusive curriculum for all children, regardless of any additional learning needs that they may have. English medium, Welsh medium, our schools that deliver a bilingual, bilingual provision. So representing the diversity,
and early years, of course, in there as well.
Yeah, representing the diversity of what we have in our Welsh education system, and they have been working on the individual AOLEs. So this is a curriculum designed by the profession for the profession. It's, of course, they've looked at international best practice, they've had academic input, they've had support from third sector organisations. So lots and lots and lots of people, whether that be the Institute of Physics, for instance, or the Learned Society of Wales, and they've been supported in this work. Their work is about to be published on the 30th of April. And all right. Then we will have, for everybody in Wales to see, a draft of the new curriculum. And now we move into the next phase, where it's not just the preserve of pioneers to work on this, all schools in Wales will need to become pioneers, and we will have a period now from the end of April to the end of the summer term where there will be feedback and testing, and people will be able to engage with what is published at the end of this month. So we're really getting to that crucial point now where we will be really giving the detail that lies behind those six areas of learning and experience, the what matters statement. So what matters in health and well-being? What are the principles that will lie behind our expressive arts? And also, what does progression look like? So at various points during a child's career, how can we measure progress? So what would we expect, nominally a child at 7? Where would we expect them to be?
So is this your way of saying we're going to be having SATs in year 6 and year 4 testing, or is it as critical as that and high stakes?
Well,
testing is critical to monitoring progress.
Yeah, well, what we have in Wales is not testing. We have assessments for learning, not assessments for accountability, but assessments for learning.
So I can feel a lot of teachers nodding.
So we can check in where that child is at the moment, and it can help inform teachers, parents about what the next steps are to develop that child's education. And we've invested heavily, actually, and we see the beginnings of that investment coming through this year, is actually we're moving to online adaptive testing, which again, much, much more useful than the traditional pen and paper test that a child would sit. These online adaptive testing enables a teacher to do that at any point in the academic year that they feel is helpful. It can be done more than once. The results are instantaneous, so there's not that workload element for teachers. And also the tests adapt to individual children. So the questions and the test can really see where children are really moving and doing really well, or perhaps where they're actually, that they find something a bit more difficult, and that's where we need to focus next on addressing learning for that child. And so what's really important is that there are better ways of holding school accountable, but individual children's assessment should never be that way.
It's a shame because the words outcomes and accountability have become very dirty and scary words in parts of England. I think you're going to have to possibly rebuild off this dike here, because you're going to have a deluge of English teachers coming across the wall, because this just sounds too good to be true.
Well, they'd be very welcome here.
Steady
very
on,
welcome
steady on.
Indeed.
I'll have Mr. Gibb on my back if I'm not careful here. You just mentioned an elephant, actually, because I think there's an elephant in the room, and I'm glad you did mention that elephant, because that elephant in the room for me quite often is the parent community. You're doing some very bold things here, and I've struggled to understand, particularly with my view from England, why creativity, the arts, have been such a dirty word, and I've wondered if it's conspiracy, I've wondered if it's because it's expensive or whatever, and actually realising in many cases it's actually because to criticise the arts and position them as an easy, lightweight option make quite good headlines. Quite good headlines for newspapers. We need to be testing our kids, we need the 3 R's, because that's what parents, the community, often wants to hear. What are you doing, and how aware are you of the need to win the hearts and minds of the parent and carer community? Because they're the people that often make the GCSE decisions, they're the people that will vote you back in, hopefully. So what have you done to address them? Because you didn't mention their input to that process so far. What's the sort of feeling around that?
You're absolutely right, and it's a question of when is the right time to do that, because how can you do that in a successful and meaningful way, and reach all parents rather than a certain section of society. And I think our public consultation that will start now at the end of the month is the perfect time to engage with parents. And the first job that I have to do is to have that conversation about parents, about why change in the first place? You know, why is change necessary, and why is this the right thing to do for their children? And we will be undertaking a curriculum roadshow led by myself, where we will be actually getting out there into schools, into communities, to talk to parents and the wider community. So employers, for instance, about why we're changing the education system in Wales and what this will mean. And of course, the biggest advocates, I think, for some of this change are those children that have been in our pioneer schools that are already engaging with this new curriculum. And when you talk to those children and those teachers, they are full of enthusiasm. They see a difference that it's making to learning and to children. Some schools already say that in terms of literacy and communication skills, the children are forging ahead. And ultimately, that's what parents are interested in, is one, their children's well-being. Are they happy in school? And secondly, are they learning and progressing? Recognising that each child is different, and what success looks like for one child is different for what success is for another child. I see that with my own three children, very, very, very different. They like different things in schools. They do better at different things in schools. And I'm very fortunate in Wales. I don't see that our parents make that distinction between the three R's and expressive arts. Maybe it's the long tradition that we have in Wales valuing the expressive arts, whether that be music and drama. Actually, parents say to me they value that in their children's curriculum. And of course, the skills that children are developing when they're doing expressive arts can only assist their literacy and their numeracy.
Do you know what the fourth R is traditionally?
Do tell me.
Oh, I'm so excited. I've come to Wales and I can teach the Welsh Education Secretary something fantastic. So the fourth R apparently is wroughting, as in wrought iron. Are you making?
Oh, I see.
And let's face it, if Wales isn't a part of the world that built its heritage and its history and its foundations on wroughting and making, I don't know where it is. And so let's sell the four R's to parents, shall we?
Absolutely. But the parents, as I said, the parents I come across, they want their children to have that broad, balanced educational experience. And they really value what children can learn and skills they can develop by participating in the expressive arts, whether that is, you know, physically making things, or whether that is expressing themselves through dance, through theatre and drama, through music, through singing. You know, there isn't a school I go to where the first thing that happens is that I am in receipt of a performance of some kind. It could be a reading, it could be poetry, it's usually music, there's always a choir.
It's funny because I'm aware that a chap called Russell Prue's been doing a lot of work in your schools, running local radio stations in schools, teaching children journalist skills, communication skills, confidence. I mean, ironically, I grew up in Ludlow, just up the Welsh border in Shropshire, and very academic grammar school education, which I was supposed to be lucky to have. My formative years, my best education was working in a butcher shop, dealing with the public, building that confidence, handling money, learning a few kind of wisecracks off the other butchers, and dealing with the members of the public. And you can't underestimate the value of that within the context of education.
Absolutely, and that's why we have our Welsh Baccalaureate qualification, both at post-16, you know, and at 16, which looks to you, you know, ensure that that young people undertake periods of work experience, volunteering. And if you listen to children, they want more of that in their curriculum. I don't know whether your listeners are aware, but the Welsh Assembly has recently created and elected its first Welsh Youth Parliament. These are 60 young people elected and selected by their peers to represent them. And they recently had a ballot on the three subjects they wanted to concentrate on in their two-year term of office. First was mental health and mental well-being of children. And another topic in their top three was actually life skills within the curriculum.
Wow.
What more can the curriculum do to ensure that people are financially literate, that they know how to participate in the democratic processes, how they can influence decision makers, how they can lead those successful lives. So children themselves know and understand and are calling for changes.
That's absolutely fantastic to hear that that engagement and to hear youth vote, young person, voice, student voice. I think one of nowhere has been has the art of teaching, the craft of teaching, which you describe, and the trust you're placing in teaching professionals to do their best based on their knowledge and best practice, been evident. I mean, I'm here as much as anything indirectly through an introduction from Professor Mick Waters, who I'm sure you know very well, who said to say hello. And he's introduced me to several schools. We did a session down in Mount Stewart School in Cardiff Bay here back in November. And I popped into a school at Professor Waters' introduction, Langston Primary School near Newport, where my godparents live, funny enough. And had the most fantastic half-day session there where we did our Rocket Kids session, fired rockets, made rockets, did an assembly all about this Rocket Boy story. And the next week, they came to Parliament in Westminster with some of their parents to be part of the launch of our Art Connects Festival, which we're running across the whole year, and then got me back in to do a robot session. And those parents, the support that those parents were demonstrating across the community, there was a real mix of people there, and the passion, enthusiasm and support was evident to see. Is that typical, or was I very lucky to get into that school? Because you'd have picked your pioneer schools to cherry pick the best, or was it deliberately representative?
Well, our pioneer schools were, as I said, in some cases, we asked for volunteers rather than recruits. Actually, do you want to be a part of this process? And we were overwhelmed by the number of schools who put their hand up and said, yes, absolutely, we want to be a part of this. And then having had a look at those people that have come forward, inevitably there's some gaps. So have we got enough secondary? And you know, and then you know, actually going out and saying to some extra secondaries, please come and be a part. Because we needed to make sure that all parts of the sectors were covered and all areas of learning and experience. Because you know, we had lots and lots of very, very keen humanities. And well, we've got to make sure that we've got equally, you know, the right numbers of people to do our sciences. But there's been a huge, been an overwhelming enthusiasm for it. And what's really made me hopeful and confident is actually non-pioneer schools, so people who were not part of this process, actually working as part of their cluster, but also engaging in this work even before there's an expectation that they should, and because they see the benefits for their children. Of course, for some it's easier than others. I think it's less of a challenge in the primary sector. Our foundation phase curriculum and the pedagogical principles underlying that, you know, that's very familiar to our primary schools. In fact, they've been crying out for years that we have this approach up until the children are seven, and then all of a sudden at seven we make them sit at a desk and then it's head down, very, very traditional. So they've been crying out for that freedom and flexibility and those different ensuring those pedagogical principles are extended beyond the foundation phase. It's harder for secondary schools, and that's one of the reasons why we are rolling out the curriculum more slowly in secondary schools, to give professionals in the sector time to adapt. Inevitably, secondary schools are always focused on qualifications. What does this look like at 16? You know, this is all very well, Kirsty Williams, but is this real? Are you going to suddenly turn around and we're going to say to the children when they go into year 10, well, that was all very nice, but now it's head down 2 years. We're going to hothouse you to get these GCSEs. So what's been really important is that we've involved Qualifications Wales, our independent qualifications body. They've been involved in this work from the very beginning, so that they can start planning about what does what does assessment and qualifications going to look like at 16? Because that's a big concern for parents. You know, what are my children potentially going to do, leave school with? What are those qualifications going to look like? Is that going to enable them to progress onto post-compulsory education and training? What is this? Are they portable? Are they going to be recognised across the border if they want to be employed across the border or go to a college or a university? So it's been really important to ensure that that is embedded in our work. So, but overall, the overwhelming feeling is one of enthusiasm and of a belief that we are, as you said, trusting in our profession to be the very best that they can be and to really unleash the creativity of our teachers in a way that perhaps has been stifled. Of course, there's responsibilities with that, big responsibilities with that. So we're reforming our initial teacher education programs and our universities, because we need to make sure that they're as good as they need to be. That independent process has led to some really challenging decisions. So, you know, one university that has trained teachers for a long time has not been not been assessed and accredited going forward, because we need first-class programmes. But we're also recognising that there is a cadre of professionals out there that have only ever taught under one system. So we are investing a significant amount of resources, money going direct to head teachers and direct to schools for professional learning, so that in anticipation of the curriculum becoming statutory in 2022, there's that time and that space for individual teachers and clusters of teachers to be able to get ready. Because changing the curriculum is one thing, but we have to change practice in the classroom.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the word you mentioned there, I mean, creativity is the word that really underpins what we're doing with this Art Connects thing. Creativity, putting creativity first, using creativity, the power of creativity in people to engage young people in their learning, to create careers, and to engage and reconnect communities and society. Creativity lends itself to the teaching of creativity, creative subjects, as well as teaching creatively, pedagogy. So I was blown away by Langston Primary. I go in there and do a rocket workshop. Now we go and do a rocket workshop in many schools, and we go and we leave, and it's back to the status quo. That school, when I went back a month later, they showed me how that half-day session had informed literacy, how it had informed their science, how it had informed their practical work, how it had informed trips, how it had informed their community engagement. It was phenomenal. And they turned it into a project because they had that space. Ofsted in England have got this three eyes. If tell us what your intention is, tell us what your implementation plans are, tell us what your impact is. So you've got that scope. But as you say, you then hit the buffers when you get to secondary. What scope does the Welsh education system have at secondary for adopting slightly more creative pedagogies, project-based learning, the sort of things you might have seen in a film called Most Likely to Succeed, and if you've seen that. So, yeah, can you give us an idea of that?
Well, absolutely. And those principles will extend right the way through to 16. And that's why it is more challenging for the secondary school, because they're not used to teaching necessarily in that way, or planning their curriculum.
But they're also testing within those silos for GCSE,
yeah, absolutely. They? And that's why qualifications have been involved, because we recognise, whilst the brand of the GCSE is a powerful brand and will stay, actually what it looks like may well change. And you're right, there is this. So we need to give secondary more space, but that's exactly what we would want to see happening in secondary schools. And you're right, this is about creativity. It doesn't have to exist in the silo of expressive arts, AOLE, is it? Actually, we can use our creativity to unlock learning in all other subjects. And we've seen Wales really push at the forefront of this with the partnership that we've had in recent years with our Arts Council.
The Arts Council are very involved in this, aren't they?
Yeah, very much with our Creative Learning Through the Arts programme, which has been really challenging. And as we come to the end of the first phase of that programme, I was only last week meeting some teachers that have been a part of it, who said that they themselves had found it really challenging. I visited one school and the teacher was horrified, because she usually had a very, very ordered, quite sterile classroom. And the classroom had been turned upside down by the practitioner that had come to work with the children.
Wasn't Mrs. Lewis by the chance,
was it? No, unfortunately not. But the practitioner that had come to school to work alongside the teacher the children, she turned the place down, and professionally that had been really challenging for the teacher. But she said what the children had got out of it, and what she as a professional had got out of it, was actually going to change the way she approached other lessons. And I think it's really important as well that we recognise that children learn in different ways. A fantastic project where we had boys who were really not engaging in English. Hated writing anything down. The ability to bring in a rap musician into that school to do a workshop around rap, which was a lot cooler than writing about something the teacher had asked them to write about. But actually that unleashed in those boys a permission to write about what they were feeling, to express themselves both verbally and on paper. And the teacher said she would never believe that class of boys, very reluctant students, by the end of this project and working with that creative professional, their literacy and communications, what they were writing down was just superb. And it's about really challenging and recognising this is sometimes a key to unlock learning opportunities for sometimes that the traditional pedagogy and traditional approaches have left some children excluded.
And it's fantastic you're going to have those, you're offering those opportunities within the curriculum for teachers to take that and to see that gap and to exploit it. You talk about contemporary culture there, rap, hip hop, whatever. I'm personally very passionate, very excited, and I've just sat through the film show at the Pierhead just down the road, and I'd forgotten that Cardiff was built on the first steam revolution. You're known for steam coal, lowercase STAM, and here we are with the capital steam revolution going on. And I'm going up to the Big Pit this afternoon, so I'm very keen that we are coming back to South Wales for a week during our Art Connects Festival summer tour, and I'm very keen to work with schools to bring our Rocket Kids Rocket Story, which is based on this book here, which I'm going to give you a copy of, actually.
Oh,
a book
thank
by
you.
Homer Hickam, four boys growing up in West Virginia in the 50s.
Oh,
didn't
my gosh.
Didn't want to be coal miner. What did you say? Why have you said that?
Oh, my grandfather was a coal miner in West Virginia.
No.
That's what he did.
Good gosh. So Homer Hickam grew up in a place called Coalville. Oh, and I love saying to the children when I do this assembly, there was one job in Coalville. What do you think it was? Writing books. I thought that's got to be a great mark, great score. One person got that job. Basically coal mining. And these four boys, they saw the Sputnik satellite. They had an idea. They learned to make rockets. They ended up working for NASA.
Yeah.
It's an amazing story of community, of aspiration, of creativity, of hard work. And interesting, in that talk, I talk to the children. I say, well, who'd like to be a coal miner? And all the hands go up and say, you don't really want to be a coal miner. Look, I had my thumb chopped off in a coal mine once, and they all look aghast. I have to get my 3D printed one out of my pocket, and it's all the way again. And then I was chatting to a miner, a chap at the Big Pit who used to be a coal miner. And he didn't say what I wanted to hear. I said, I bet you're glad to be at the pit, aren't you? I bet you're glad they've closed the pits down. And he said, no, I really miss that. And one's got to be very careful not to be too glib about this. There was a sense of camaraderie. There was a sense of pride. It provided a lot of identity. And I was chatting to a guy in Leeds, because we're looking to do the same thing, hopefully, up in Bradford, in Wakefield, at the National Coal Mining Museum up there. And I was talking to an educator in Leeds, and he said, my dad worked in a pit. And one day he took me down that pit when I was 16, and I cried for a day because I realised what my dad was doing for me. Mm-hmm. How do you marry that culture, that pride, that heritage with these, because you're now investing in high tech jobs, and because you've got science as part of your portfolio
yes,
as well, you've got the movie industry in South Wales. How do you connect this education with culture and make it relevant and interesting and this future world? I don't even know if there's a question there. It's a bit of a brain dump, Kirsty, but you're nodding and dying to get a word in. It's not easy with me, so your turn.
No, I recognise that community. My father was the first person in his family not to go down to the pit. My grandfather was indeed a coal miner in West Virginia. And when he was very elderly, and my mum asked him, why did you leave South Wales and go to West Virginia? And he said, well, I could ruin my lungs for more money in West Virginia than I could ruin them in Wales. I think what's really important is that we recognise, quite rightly, as you said, the gentleman that you spoke to in Big Pit, the pits, the steelworks, the slate mines of North Wales, the tin plate works in the town of Llanelli where I grew up, were more than just about a job. First of all, it was the dignity of work, the ability to do exactly that for your son and your family. But it represented a stake in a community. You were someone. And it represented the cohesion of that community. So associated with many, many, many of those industries was the Working Women's Club and the social element of it. Many of those communities' first libraries were built with the pennies of those workers. That recognise that education and culture belong to them as much as it belonged to everybody else. They usually ran the football teams and the rugby teams in the winter and the cricket teams in the summer. So that workplace was the underpinning of the entirety.
And can I chip in the choir there
as
well?
Yeah, the entirety of the community. And when those industries were lost, then that sense of belonging and pride and a stake in society was removed. Now, clearly, we don't want to send children down the pits anymore. But what we can do for our children is make sure that they're at the forefront of renewable energy. It was Welsh coal that powered the world. Why shouldn't it be Welsh tidal power that powers the energy of today and tomorrow? Renewables. So, no, I don't want that minus send down the pit, but I would love that minus send to be at the forefront of tidal lagoon power and new renewable forms of energy, the engineer that keeps that wind turbine
and the turning. Creative industries, of course.
And absolutely. So this is not to dismiss what came before, and an important part of our new curriculum, which will be seen not just in history, but actually throughout the curriculum, is that we need to ensure that children learn about that, learn about their cultural heritage. And that sense of the Welsh dimension will be one of the themes that will be interwoven through all the six AOLEs, so that children know that, know about where they've come from, know about Wales's contribution to the rest of the world. So it's not to dismiss what's gone before, but it is to harness what Welsh people have always known. There is a reason why the word for school in Welsh, ysgol, is also the word for ladder.
Oh, wow.
We know that in our nation, and we need to ensure that education is that ladder to bigger and brighter futures for individuals. And if we get it, as I said at the very beginning, if we get it right for them, we'll get it right for the future of our country. So it's not to dismiss what's gone in the past, but it's to use the values that drove those individuals to be able to inspire a new generation.
That's fantastic.
No, that's my brain dump.
No,
all
gosh,
in one
that
go.
That was wonderful. I'm glad you gave me a breather there, actually. I think what just a couple of things before we do wind up. One of the biggest questions here, and I don't think we need to go into it now because I think we've answered it indirectly, is what is the point of school? Once upon a time, it was to teach people to sit still in factories and offices and go down pits and mind their own business, if you like. Now, you know, robots, AI are going to take a lot of the jobs. There will be jobs in renewables. There will be jobs in the creative industries. But we're passionate with Steamco that we can use the power of creativity and people to reconnect communities, to help people come to terms with life with a little less work or different types of work. And one of my most inspiring people I know, one of the most creative people I know, is a chap from Merthyr, funny enough, who left Merthyr many years ago and went to London, started one of the first nightclubs, the Wag Club in Soho. Chris Sullivan, don't know if you've come across him, he's done some talks for us over the years, and he's just publishing a book called about Mavericks. I think the book is called Mavericks, and very much about how that gritty working class background was the bedrock for raw creativity. The Bowies, the Damien Hirsts, all the young British artists came from that background, and you've got such potential here to sort of to do that. And I think one of the things that popped out recently for me, we talked about parents earlier, I felt we almost had a new patron saint for Britain. I'm going to claim this person for Britain. Listening to Women's Hour last year, hearing Charlotte Church on there, and the work that she's doing and the advocacy that she's played and the part she's played to advocate for creativity in this broad and balanced curriculum. I mean, you've got such an army behind you on this, haven't you? And it's such an exciting time.
Yes, indeed. And I recently met Charlotte, actually, to talk about some of these issues and about the new curriculum. She actually came in to find out a bit more about what we were doing and what we're aspiring to. We are very fortunate. This is not an easy job. There will be bumps in the road. There will be things that we will need to acknowledge that perhaps haven't worked out as well as we would like, and the ability to change them. But being creative and developing and giving permission for children to be creative, because inherently human beings are creative, but in some ways our education system, you know, curtails that, diminishes it. But actually giving children permission, they will be the people that will solve the challenges that we will face as an individual country and indeed as the world. And, you know, those children will do jobs that we haven't even thought about yet. We haven't even thought about. They will need to change their jobs as they go through their working life. Those days of being down in the pit for the entirety of a life are long gone. Long gone. So they will need to be able to have that creativity, which will allow them to reinvent themselves and reinvent their working career and reinvent the society that they will be living in. You know, I don't want them just to understand the society that they will live in when they leave school. I want them to be able to change it, and I want them to be able to develop it and make it better.
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, we called this the A to Z of art, if you like, and we've seen last week collaboration, and I'm seeing from the people I've met the passion in the parent community, the passion in the schools. I was at the National Education Show here in Cardiff last November, where we actually launched this festival, and we'll be back there this year. I've seen the passion for teachers to hoover up CPD and learning, and I'd imagine you've got a whole learning and training platform, yeah. And you'll probably be part of that, and we're working with them and looking forward to come back. We say that art, we spell STEM with an A, and I know you've got the science brief, but we don't care for acronyms, STEM, STEAM, whatever. For us, it's about creativity, as we said. Art is what we call it when what we do might connect us to somebody else. 2 weeks ago, I was at an event in Waltham Forest, which is London's Borough of Culture. I saw the most amazing performance by some young men talking about knife crime and the pressure on them and mental health. Their art teacher is from South Wales. Next Sunday, her mother's opening a theatre in Newport, you may have heard of it, in a toilet. Mm. And I'm coming back for that. Oh, and we're going to be printing I Love Art t-shirts and doing I Love Art selfies and get some posters. I think there's no better way of demonstrating how art connects England and Wales. And I'm glad to come from a town on the border. And I'm glad the borders are open. I'm glad you've welcomed us in here today. Before I say thank you properly, art is what we call it when what we do might connect us.
Well, art is, for me, is what makes us human.
What makes us human?
It's what makes us human in all its forms. It is that stillness that I get when I'm fortunate to see, you know, some fantastic painting. It is that exhilaration that piece of music gives you that just makes you want to get up and dance like nobody's watching you. It is that piece of stage work that makes you truly think about who you are and what your community is. Art is what makes us human.
I've just had a big rustle on the table there. Rustle on the microphone. I'm not only going to give you a copy of Rocket Boys by Homer Hickam. I'm not only going to give you an Education Manifesto for Change by Richard Gerber. I'm going to give you 3 sheets of I Love Art stickers.
Thank
give
you.
Those to people.
Oh my goodness, thank
because,
you very much.
Because your art, Kirsty, is being human. I'm going to blow your cover completely now and tell everybody we're sitting here in a conference room in the National Assembly in Wales, in Cardiff Bay, and you've got a lovely t-shirt on, you've got your Converse trainers on, because you are a very human being. You're exactly the right person for the job. We can edit that off if we need to. Let's have a podcast handshake. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. That's been wonderful. It's been wonderful.
Wow, what a fantastic conversation. Such frankness, such honesty, such creativity in an education minister really is refreshing. We'd love to know what you think of that chat. So if you want to record a very short response, 30, 60 seconds or so, use your voice recorder in your smartphone and email it to yourturn@steamco.org.uk, yourturn@steamco.org.uk, whether you agree with this creative approach, whether you feel that a more academic approach is appropriate. We'd love to hear the broad range of perspectives on this. Email that in and we'll add them to the end of next week's podcast, which I'll announce now is actually going to be with Professor Bill Lucas from the University of Winchester, who I caught up with. It's a slightly shorter podcast, that one, because he was rushing off to do a fantastic workshop, which I was lucky enough to be part of. So be sure to email your comments in now. That day in South Wales with Kirsty there really was a very special day. I had my son with me. After it, we went up to the Big Pit, which is a coal mine just north of Cardiff, about 30, 40 minutes drive. Absolutely fantastic place. It's a culture centre, they've got a museum there, visitor centre, but you can actually have a trip down a coal mine 100 metres deep, and it is one of the most humbling experiences. The stories that they tell us, I won't spoil it now, about those kids, those families, those communities, it really is very powerful. And it's all free, and it's suitable for any age range, so what a fantastic thing to do in the Easter holidays. So get along there to the Big Pit in Blenavon in South Wales. As I put this podcast together, I'm very excited because I've been invited to an art opening actually on Sunday afternoon in Newport, where somebody's opening a theatre in a community, literally in the middle of a terrace street, a theatre in an old public toilet that she's bought. I think she's certainly a mother, possibly even a grandmother. And she's an incredible art activist. She runs an art centre down there in Newport. She runs this theatre, which is going to be opening on Sunday afternoon. And all these connections have just been wonderful. I mean, that was a connection via the Waltham Forest Culture Borough event I went to the other week over there in One Host Street in Walthamstow. I've been connected with school communities down there in South Wales through Professor Mick Waters, who's been working with the Donaldson curriculum team. He's introduced me to schools. 2 months ago, I went down to Langston Primary in Newport, did our half-day Rocket Kids session. And the week after, the teacher who was involved in that session, Mr. Smith, came along with a group of children and three parents to our Parliament opening of our Art Connects 19 festival. They even sang a soundtrack to go with the Elton John song that we repurposed to promote the project, to raise awareness of the importance of art and creativity. And that was a campaign itself that we launched in Cardiff when we were speaking at the National Education Show, which is a fantastic event. And we're delighted to say we'll be collaborating on that again this year, later in the year. So look out for that fantastic day of CPD for all South Wales teachers and English teachers. We met a lot of people there from Somerset, from Bristol, Worcestershire, Gloucestershire. They all came over. Fantastic day. And that day we actually did our Rocket Kids session in Mount Stuart Primary School, right in the middle of Cardiff Bay, a fantastically culturally rich area, very challenged community. And that's where we announced our 2-week tour of Britain, the 12 days of Creative Christmas. So lots of little connections. And that's why this is called the art of whatever podcast series, the Art Connects 19 podcast series. Because art, whatever your art is what we call it when what we do might connect us. And at Steamco, we're on a mission to help connect our kids with their art and to connect our communities with their schools. We've had so much interest in our Art Connects 19 Festival of Creative Schools, Work and Lives that we're going to be running activities all through the summer term in different parts of the UK, taking our half and full day sessions to school communities. We're going to be spending a whole week in South Wales, and we're confirming the date for that soon. And we're delighted to say that GWR, LNER and Virgin Trains and London Underground have given us a train ticket to go anywhere on their lines to take our half day Art of Train session, which is essentially our art of rockets, an art of books, the art of trains, a mashup of all those sessions, which is an all-school assembly, a rocket-making activity for a class, and then we launch a real dynamite-powered rocket off at the end of the session. It's a fantastic way of connecting your community and getting everybody really fired up for a creative summer. So check that out. Search for Art of Trains. That competition ends just after the Easter holidays. And you don't have to wait for us to come to you. Why don't you download our graphics, our logo, our Art Connects 19 sign and run an Our Art 19 event in your school, a performance, a screening, a conversation, whatever you want to do that celebrates art and creativity in your school community. And thanks so much again for listening to this podcast. So grateful to you for listening. Please, please feedback on what you think of these podcasts. We've had some great responses already. Do a voice recording. Email it in and let's add you to the back end of next week's podcast. Do be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, and go on, please give us a few stars. We need to get a few stars, it would appear, to even get considered, because I assume that the first five are all your family. So yeah, back some stars in. Thanks for listening.